NFL Sunday Ticket is now on YouTube and YouTube TV, which means that you can stay close to your team even if you don't live in their town. Like, maybe you're a Raven who married a Seahawk who got a job in the land of the Falcons. With NFL Sunday Ticket, you can watch your team's out-of-market Sunday afternoon games no matter where you live, because you shouldn't have to change teams even if you change towns. NFL Sunday Ticket, now on YouTube and YouTube TV. Go to youtube.com/presale to get $50 off.
Terms and embargoes apply. Offer ends 9/19. No refund. Subscription auto renews.
Wait, are you gaming? On a Chromebook?
Yep. It's got a high-res 120Hz display, plus this killer RGB keyboard. And I can access thousands of games anytime, anywhere.
Stop playing.
What?
Get out of here.
Huh?
Yeah, I want you to stop playing and get out of here so I can game on that Chromebook.
Got it.
Discover the ultimate cloud gaming machine, a new kind of Chromebook.
To be honest with you, high grade cricket.
Hello and welcome to the Grade Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, England win their ODI series against Ireland with 10 other blokes that aren't nearly as interesting as Johnny Bairstow, as the rarest of rare units goes past 3,000 ODI runs and scores a 21-ball 50. We're dissecting the new step 4 restrictions to club cricketers in the UK that include wearing whites to games and no warm-ups. The IPL has a start and finish date in the UAE, and the BCCI want to kill the WBBL. Matthew Hayden is on the show to talk about sledging styles of Australian cricketers in the 90s and 2000s. His 380 against Zimbabwe and Shawab. Stephen Finn is on the show to discuss being welcomed by the locals when having dinner in Australia, having a law named after you, bloodlust, and how to get rid of Broad and Anderson. Hashtag AskTGC is about TGC versus tailenders, getting outfitted by 2020, and love in North Yorkshire. This is all thanks to Budgie Smuggler, budgiesmuggleruk.com, and Wisden Cricket Monthly, who are offering a good little deal, in fact, two good little deals to our listeners, which we'll speak about a little bit later on. My name is Ian Higgins, and I'm joined by Sam Perry, Pezzy. Pezzy lad.
Indeed.
Pezzy lad.
Yeah.
How are you, mate?
Very well, thanks. Yeah, very well, considering that our state, Victoria, we're both kind of imports to Victoria.
Sure.
But we do live here now for tax purposes,
we're coming
purposes,
here, we steal the Victorians' jobs,
we're in a state
sleep
of,
with our women.
We're in a state of disaster.
Yeah.
We're in a state of disaster, but here we are casting.
Just like most of my cricket career.
Oh, very good. With women.
Mate, a couple of weeks ago, we spoke about best excuses for missing games with cricket. And a good one came in from Graham Rummins, who, as he stated out, is it was Greg Rummins, it wasn't Graham Rummins,
right,
who pointed that out. But he said, read best excuses missing grade games. 1993-94, playing Sydney Test cricket for St George. My best mate, Simo, won a date with Elle Macpherson via News Limited promo. His mum entered for him. Missed the game, dropped, never recovered. Mm. Captain didn't believe him. 18 years old. You can't knock that back. Roughly 2 years later, I was playing with said captain and he brought it up as the worst excuse ever used. Filled him in how it was actually a true story, and Elle brushed him on the day after 5 minutes. Still a lucky prick. Love your work. That's a fair reason missing a game of cricket. Date with Elle Macpherson?
Yeah, regards Rummo, not the Graham Rummins, but Greg Rummins, who also played at St George at that era for the niche southern Sydney listeners. That's a pretty good reason to miss cricket.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking about Elle Macpherson.
You ever do that?
Would I do that?
No, did you ever?
I didn't miss cricket to go on a 5-minute date with Elle Macpherson. I was thinking about Elle Macpherson, like her nickname was and still is The Body. I was just thinking, like, as far
so
as nicknames,
good.
Yeah, like you're like you'd agree that we have a thin line here on the Grade Cricketer between praise and objectification, and we walk up with aplomb. But like, if you're in the business of super modelling, as Elle Macpherson was, can there be a more laudable nickname than The Body?
That is laudable.
Like, it's the greatest nickname you could possibly have. Like, I'm trying to extrapolate that to other areas of life. Like, if you're a batter, like, you'll just be called The Runs, or like if you're a doctor. The Health. They call him The Health. And so on.
Yeah.
So anyway, but I was thinking about excuses for missing game. I know we talked about it a few weeks ago. We're talking about some guy in the 1880s who got kidnapped by WG Grace.
Billy Midwinter.
Billy Midwinter.
As Joffrey called him, Billy Midwater.
Midwater.
Yeah, in your birthday message. That was a real thing that I put in last week. Yeah. I don't know if we didn't talk about that at all, but yeah. I went onto the application Cameo, which many people know about. There's celebrities on there and you can pay some money and they send you a birthday message. And so I was just, it was Pezzy's birthday coming up. So I just jumped online and Joffrey was on there.
Yep.
And so I just sent a little message and he did his thing, but he mispronounced Billy Midwinter.
Was that when he was in quarantine?
Well, it must've been, yeah.
Possibly, yeah.
It was at the team hotel.
Tom Wilson.
Sending you a birthday message.
So I was trying to think of another, like,
that was three grand
ball
spin from me.
I never wanted to ask what you paid for that joke, but I was very appreciative.
Worth it. Worth it.
I played a game in 06, 07. This is relevant. Like, I just joined the first grade side at Norths, right? So I was nobody, low on the rung.
Play first grade, you mate?
Yeah. Well, no, this is relevant. It's relevant. So, like, I played with a guy who wasn't just late to a game. It was against your club, actually.
It was my club.
You weren't at that level, but yeah. at the time. Actually, ever. He wasn't just, I'm talking to myself, the Jiminy Cricket on my shoulder.
Yeah, there we go.
He just didn't lob.
Lobless.
And no excuse for it. Like, he was a dashing opening batsman.
The dasher.
Stop it. But he was like the least grade cricket character possible.
Yeah.
Like, he was grungy. He skated. He had fine tastes in music.
Alternative.
Things like this. In 05, 06, 07, that wasn't what you did.
That's not what you did.
People in the team just didn't get him. And like, he had a massive night. He's just gone, fuck it, I'm not coming. He just didn't come to the game. And I should have seen the writing on the wall, because the week before I'd noticed there'd been an incident with him and his opening partner.
Yeah.
Couldn't get two more polar opposite guys. So there's this guy, I won't say his name, but he's the grungy guy, skates, not into cricket that much, but could hit a long ball.
Yeah.
And then his other guy was a private school elite, went to a elite school on the North Shore of Sydney.
Yeah.
Sort of inherited a bit of family wealth, well-to-do guy, a bit of a real estate magnate.
Sure.
Ended up becoming one.
Yeah.
And basically there was this thing at lunchtime where this is in England, like, you still bring your own lunch, first grade and stuff like that, but you still bring your own lunch. And everyone's got good lunch. Some guys even have parents who are still bringing stuff because they've never grown up because they're children's body.
Yep.
But this guy, the grungy guy, has brought a Tupperware container with two sausages in it. Just two sausages, cold, wrinkly, look grilled. And like, his opening partner just couldn't get over it. Like, he found it the funniest thing he'd ever seen.
This is
the
incident.
Yeah, this is the incident. Okay. And I think he really made a big deal of it, probably bullied him about it. But he was crying with laughter at the depravity of it, I think. And then, the following week.
Depravity.
Yeah, it was just so.
So there's no garnish with it. No
nothing.
Sauce.
He just had two sausages. Literally, like, and I'd seen his house later on. Like, he was living in a share house. It was an absolute bomb.
Yeah.
That was fine. Each to their own.
Yeah.
I wasn't saying much. Few weeks before, my parents had just divorced and stuff, living with my dad. He's just sent me out to a PG's game with a boiled egg, So, he was learning.
Just doing his best.
Fair. Yeah,
he's doing his best. Yeah.
But, I think this guy got bullied out of the club kind of thing, because his opening partner had been crying with laughter about his two wrinkled sausages and just didn't turn up next week. So,
that's
a good reason to miss.
Now that you say that, there was one at my club. It was a fifth grade game.
Right.
I wasn't playing. I was in a higher grade.
just be clear.
Yeah, just
this is the grade I was in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was a fifth grade game, and it was out of Hawkesbury. So one of the grounds, we always talk about Hawkesbury. It was like the furthest possible place you could travel from my club to. Anyway, this guy was he was in the Navy or the Army. He was a military guy, Navy, massive unit, great head of hair.
Nice.
But he had a bit about him.
Okay.
Had a bit about him.
As guys in the military might.
Yeah.
With respect.
Absolutely. Probably saw some stuff and. I'm not sure if I should say his name, but he drove to the game, got to the car park at Benson's Lane, and then turned around. He drove there and he just didn't fancy it. He got there and turned around.
I think
there's
a lot of cricketers out there who see Benson's Lane who
not for me.
Can kind of understand
that. Not for me today,
Just turned up, just saw the big fields, the big flies.
Which one do I go to?
The lack of trees.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple of bomber planes flying over, because there is a military field near
Richmond,
there.
The Richmond airfield's right there. Yeah,
base, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Something happened.
Actually, sometime when you played, there was loud as fuck.
Mm.
Actually, when I played in the UK, in Surrey, what's the name of the airfield? There's an airfield right near Camberley's, like the ground that's the club I played against, the There's a military airfield right there. And when the planes are going, it's loud as fucking anything. You know those like really windy days when you're in the boundary? You've spoken about this in the past and you just can't hear anything. Yeah. Like all your senses are fucked up because it's just wind going through your air, going through your ears and stuff. And
it's one of the funniest things about like you're chasing a ball or like you're running between wickets and like guys from the pavilion are calling out one or two and like you can't hear anything because it's just the rush of the wind in your ears. But you're getting a lot of instructions or bowler, keeper, can't hear a thing. Yeah. I don't know if maybe that's just me.
Yeah. Anyway, Bairstow batted well.
Yeah, can tell lots happening in the cricket world this week. This meandering start.
England versus Ireland.
Yeah, where military meets club cricket.
Well, I mean, so England have won the series 2-0 against Ireland.
And a good series win.
It's an important series win for them. Yeah, I said in the intro there, 10 blokes that aren't as interesting as Johnny Bairstow. That first game, like Billings scored some runs. He's an interesting guy, Billings, actually.
I want to talk about Billings.
Okay, let's talk about Billings to start with then, because he scored runs a couple of times. That's second ODI. It was a little bit in the mix there when Morgan got out first ball, and they were six down, about 50 to win. Ireland's had a little bit of a sniff, and then Billings and Willie just like, nah, we'll just win the game now. But yeah, Billings, interesting one, because he's like been in every squad for the last like 5 years and hardly gets a game. But he's 29.
Yeah, saw that. Well, yeah. First thing to say about the England's ODI unit, which is now separate from the test side, they are like, it is just the most, we've said this before, but it is the most anti-English stereotype possible. Like their muscle, their fast twitch, their shirts are out, they're athletic.
Yeah.
And their second side, that you know, don't have the key throbbers of Stokes and Archer, throbbers borrowed from Hello Sport there, which you should listen to. Mm-hmm. Stokes and Archer aren't in that side, but still they look so, they're so fast twitch. Mm-hmm. And Billings, I can see why they want him so much. I mean, look at him. I mean,
he fits in.
He's attractive. Yeah. He's an attractive man.
England cricket team for a while have been the best looking team going around on the circuit.
Agreed, wholeheartedly. So, like, I don't want to, you know, we were objectifying before talking about Elle Macpherson being the body. Like, England has the greatest one day side of all time, but like, how is Billings not?
Do they? I'm not sure about that.
Some would say.
The best of all time.
Well, I mean, you could put an argument forward.
Well, on that, validly. I just think like ODI cricket has accelerated so quickly.
Mm.
Like going back to Bairstow, he scored 3,000 runs. He's like the fifth quickest of all time to do that, right? But is Bairstow the fifth best ODI player of all time? No, he's not. The game's changed.
I suppose you'd have to say, does that mean New Zealand are the equal best ODI side of all time?
Well, technical, are they better?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, you've got like Billings, attractive bloke, you know, marketable.
Yeah.
He reverse sweeps for fun. Like that's his go-to shot. Yep. And he plays it with great effectiveness. Yeah. Again, blonde hair, the muscles, you know.
Jesus Christ.
David Willey.
Yeah.
Took 5 in the second game.
Salad.
You know, missed out on the World, like in being a central force in the World Cup squad last year.
He was right in the mix, wasn't
muscular.
He?
Yeah. He muscles the ball everywhere. Yeah. They've got Tom Banton, who's playing, who's very clean. Yeah. You know, we saw him in the BBL
That's
last
right.
year.
Yeah.
James Vince, 20-odd again in the first game, but looks good.
Fucking
you know,
good.
And now, and he bumps guys out now.
Yeah.
Reece Topley, 597 days between international wickets. And he looks like G.I. Joe.
Yeah.
You know, especially with the hair. Like, I mean, it's... There's a lot to like.
It's all good. It's all sexy.
Yeah, it's all really good stuff. And then Bairstow 50 from 21. They're like, oh, can he break the ODI record for 100? Nah, just 80 will do. The job, that's Bairstow. Again, we put in a request. Again, 2 blue bombers.
A couple of blue bombers and no reply.
That's okay. That's okay.
You know, you're talking about Billings reverse sweep.
Yeah.
And like Curtis Camphor, the Irish guy. Well, he was born in Joburg and he played literally South Africa under 19s in 2018. But so he's a young guy, and he's done really well in this series. A couple of 50s, a couple of wickets as well. But
the only guy to do that, the only guy to like have the first 2 games in ODI cricket with consecutive 50s and poles. Yeah,
fucking good for him.
Yeah.
He played like a couple of reverse sweeps, and like just the games moved so quickly, as in ODI cricket and T20 cricket and stuff. He played like this reverse lap for 4 or 6, might have been off Topley. And like my reaction to that 3 years ago would have been, that is the best shot I've ever seen. Now
you would have been like the jaw drop guy on The Voice in Australia with that
100%
messed up lips.
Now just literal, just exhale from the nose.
Yeah,
it's just like just so unimpressed.
Yeah,
so
what
unimpressed.
What does that sound like? Just do it. What is that? Shot.
Yeah, but I'm not even smiling. Just looking at the TV, going, okay, next.
That's right.
Anyway,
yeah, Curtis Camphor, like. As you said, hasn't played a game of cricket on his inverted commas home soil, I read.
As in Ireland.
He's never played a game in Ireland and was selected to play for Ireland, obviously South African by birth.
Yep.
And I just think You know, had that been an English player, we would have decried that decision, more importation.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's Ireland, it's like wonderful enterprise from Irish cricket.
Yeah.
Resourceful, creative. We applaud it. Congratulations.
Well, literally the England ODI captain played for Ireland, didn't he, for a couple of games.
And that's wrong. But Curtis Camphor, correct.
it's wrong unless it plays for your team. So James Vince bowls now.
Yep.
Okay. Johnny Bairstow looks fucking massive. He's getting jacked up in quarantine.
He
looks bigger. He looks thicker to me.
Yeah, so what do you – I mean, this is a topic maybe of expertise for
maybe
you.
Maybe some dietary changes because he's not like
– How do you get bigger?
We've just got to eat more. I imagine he's training because, you know, during lockdown, all the English players were like, there was like a video going around and they were like Johnny Bairstow was doing his mowing and his whites and stuff. Obviously, we saw Joss Butler doing yoga in full kit with his wife, all good stuff. But, yeah, so Johnny at home looks like he's been lifting, maybe some prison yard weights and just eating more.
Okay.
He just looked thicker through the shoulders and the chest to me.
Right.
And that's what I was looking at as he was smashing ball 80 off 40 rocks.
Once again, if anybody in the England or world cricket setup has access to Johnny Bairstow, It's getting a bit passe now, these calls, isn't it?
The problem is that, like, you know, when we're asking questions and he's, like, got dropped from the test side and stuff and it's been like, well, he probably doesn't want to speak publicly. But now he's like, you know.
But he's come out recently and said on top of his runs in this series that he wants a test recall. So perhaps it's a case of, like, let's not put him up while there's a little bit of, you know, conjecture over whether he should be playing. What we need is kind of multiple dominant hundreds at test level from Johnny Bairstow.
Yeah.
And personal connection with him as well as England cricket saying, now let's put him forward.
Yeah. So when he's at the peak of his career, that's when he'll have access to Johnny Bairstow.
I think so. There can be nothing. Like
people
sort of
want the Bairstow. Yeah, it'd be good to speak to him.
Yeah. And we can ask him about his newfound thickness, if he still has it.
That's all I want to know.
And we can negotiate the Bairstow stories from which we can.
So England at the moment, like, it's hard to tell because they should always beat Ireland, right? Like they should just win the games. And they're playing like a real second-string team and stuff, but like they look like they've got a pretty good depth, especially with Billings. Yeah,
they're good.
Middle order. Yeah, they're good.
Is this you getting very excited about Australia's impending trip over to England for an ODI series whereupon they'll quarantine for many weeks and play in a bubble?
It all feels weird. I mean, the West Indies series felt weird before, but this Ireland series feels even more like, you know.
Yeah.
Should we get into some club cricket stuff?
Yeah, man.
So last week – or maybe the week before, it was announced that there's a step four plans from the ECB to introduce club cricket safely back into the community. Some people have written in about their experience of that. I'll speak about that in a second. But some of them have caught the eye, Pez, about what players need to do when they turn up to their club games.
Because there's rules that you've got to observe to be able to play club cricket. Yes. Like there's a pandemic, if you weren't aware, and in order to play community sport in England, there are certain guidelines in order to make sure that it's safe.
That's right. So the one that caught the eye the most was the eternity game in whites. You can't.
Certainly the one.
You can only turn.
It caught the eye.
Literally, eyebrow stuff. That it's just. Well, this literal name of the show is Full Whites, isn't it? Is that what we're calling this one?
So
you can only turn up 15 minutes before play or something.
That's fine.
All good. No warm ups.
Fine.
Big in the UK, warm ups were very.
Not a lot doing.
Yeah, because the grade cricket thing is just like, well, this is my chance to be professional.
Grade cricket's like get there an hour 15 before the game. Yep. You're on the field an hour beforehand. Yep. There's all sorts of fines if you're not. There's an official timekeeper. There's a whole economy around pre-game.
If you're warming up in grade cricket, if you warm up, you have to try and find the place that the home team – sorry, if you're the away team, you have to try and find the place that you think the home team would warm up. You get there beforehand.
That's right.
Warm up in their spot.
And it's
then,
a whole thing.
And then they walk down there, fuck these blokes.
You're trying to alpha or colonise their place, try and get their territory before they do, and then there's a whole economy or psychology
process
around being first onto the field, meaning that you're the guys who want to play more.
That's right.
And then about halfway into the game on Saturday, you've got no recollection of who was first out in the field and realise that all you're doing is inventing things to stay interested in cricket in this game you should have let go a decade ago.
It's like
ago.
Doing a plyometric stretch, you know, calf stretch, you know, 45 minutes before you do anything. I'm just like getting some throwdowns. Like I'm batting six, for instance. I'm getting throwdowns at 9 in the morning.
I bat six, I don't bowl. There's no way I'm involved in the game for 3 hours. Like I'm not involved in the middle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that's why you got to bring some chat, have some stories to bite before. But yeah, if you're batting six, you're getting some throwdowns at 9 a.m., you don't actually participate in your execution of the sport till 4 in the afternoon. Those throwdowns ain't doing shit for you, brother. Yeah.
But under these new step four rules, cricket's possibly the pandemic is working out for cricketers.
Yeah, it's a step four. I don't like the name of it. Why is it? Because it's not a four step. It's step. Why isn't it called?
I don't know. I presume there were steps prior to that.
Semantics, perhaps.
Perhaps, yeah. You just had to finish off with a bit of assonance. I mean, okay, consider, okay, here goes, would you play club cricket? I mean, it's hard enough to get up for club cricket as it is. Mm. You know, you sort of go out of habit, out of roboticism. It's all you've ever known. You have a deep-seated fear of change. But now, now you're told not only do you have to deal with the, like, the existential angst of playing club cricket, the nerves the night before. Now you must arrive to club cricket in full whites. You have to, and oftentimes, let's say in London, for example, where you and I have both spent some time.
Yeah.
Very few people have cars that are getting to, like, there's a lot of tube work, a lot of bus stuff.
Very expensive place to live.
That's right. So would you travel across the tube or use the tube in full whites and your cricket kit to play cricket? Like, do you love the game that much? How would you play that?
No, I'm not.
Yeah, that's the straw that breaks the camel's back for your cricket career.
Like, aesthetics are everything.
Yes.
And
for you.
What happens if you know when you're on the tube or any sort of public transport and you're just thinking, like, I could meet the love of my life here. You want to be the people that you read about.
That's not Family Feud game. That's not the top 10
scoreboard
things
that says. I'm picking.
Oh, it's sad for you, hey.
What I'm saying is that you're getting eyes on the tube, you know, just a little stuff. Like, you're getting the wrong kind of eyes on the tube if you're wearing full whites and you've got your satchel or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You're getting eyes. You're not really looking for them. You're probably happy.
Yeah.
What's that like? But, yeah, I'm not jumping on the tube in full whites with your – what do they have? Because, like, no one has kits there. They have the – what's the fucking name of the bag that they use, like over the shoulder?
I don't know. I haven't played backpack.
That's going to really annoy me. No, it's not a backpack.
Is that like where you carry your cricket kit on your back now?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know what they're called.
Big in the UK. They all have that. Yeah, I forget what they're called.
I think it's a good look.
Yeah, I guess so. But then it annoys me. I've spoken about this before. They all come to the dressing room and they put their bags on the seat in very small dressing rooms. Yeah. I understood that.
Strange.
Anyway, Well,
I think with full whites, like, the thing that makes it difficult is you think, okay, I've got to wear full whites to the game. My first thought is, how do I solve this? Because I'm not walking around in literally my playing gear.
Fuck that.
Through London. So how do I accessorize it? But it's pretty difficult to accessorize with full whites. Like, you immediately think, I'll put a jacket over this. Maybe maybe I have a hat, some sunnies. But you're still left with creams or vanilla whites. You know, like, what do you do with those pants that you've got to wear? Like, there's no accessorizing it. What wheels do you wear? With whites.
You can't wear a nice black loafer.
Well, you can, and you look like a fucking, you look like you belong in a, you look like you've escaped, frankly.
Seen a photo of Rod Stewart walking around town.
Well, Rod Stewart can do what he wants. I mean, I think that's.
You've always said that.
Yeah, and I've always said that. But, like, literally anything that passes for accessible, acceptable footwear clashes with white, breathable cotton polyamide.
Because there is, like, a look of, like, real toff or, like, even like Hampton style of like an English cricket jumper, like a cricket vest you can get around.
Okay, yeah. But
it's always accessorized with, like, a nice linen shirt underneath and some chinos.
Well, the pants are tightly fitting, they're snug fitting.
People are wearing chinos now.
Yeah, well, you have to turn your whites into chinos.
You have to
get them to hug the calf.
Yeah, very hard to get a thigh pad on, though, underneath a chino.
I would have thought so.
I've struggled that for quite a while.
But these are the sorts of things
thicken
you have
up
to
the
do.
Quads.
You go get your Slazenger whites from Sports Direct.
Here we go.
And then you go to a tailor, get them made into chinos, but you still got that breathable polyamide cotton. And then you can throw a loafer on underneath with a cricket jumper.
Okay.
And now all of a sudden you're looking like you're a Great Gatsby.
All of a sudden. Just more
make
money.
Make 60-odd.
More money spent on cricket. Okay, well, someone wrote in actually in relation to this. It's not really an RCGC, he just wrote in about his experiences. It's from an anonymous Pommy.
Okay.
Says, gentlemen, today could potentially be my darkest cricketing day, which is basically every single email that comes into us starts.
Christ.
I've just driven into my local cricket club to play my first game of the season. Things have been moving bloody slowly in Scotland. And yes, cricket has played up here. Already wearing my white playing top. Despite the change rooms not being allowed to open, I'd rather get half naked in front of a bunch of middle-aged men, the juniors filling in to make up the numbers and the main road that runs past our ground, than turn up wearing whites. Mm-hmm. To your point, Pezza. Whilst COVID does not allow for warm-ups, not gutted one bit, it has ruined my usual routine of strolling over to the Oppo to find out how many of them played rain cards the previous night. It's not that I go drinking to be a self-proclaimed chop king, rather to get drunk enough to get a good night's sleep instead of the usual nightmares on repeat about leaving straight balls. So here I am, not allowed out of my vehicle until 15 minutes before the game is due to start. The square hasn't been prepared for this season, so we're playing on artificial turf with cones either side of the strip to allow for social distancing. Yuck. He didn't say that's just my input. Whilst the crux of the sport is still intact. Ball, bat, same shit blokes as always. I think, thankfully, I might have fallen out of love with cricket. No changing room banter, no tubs, no tea, no celebrating, no send-offs, no standing on the slips for hours at a time, not even a grass pitch, no circuit. Worse than all the above, the juniors who are filling shirts have been allowed to train for over a month now. In contrast, I haven't picked up a bat other than the odd bit of shadow batting since last August. My ultimate fear of being embarrassed by a fresh-faced 15-year-old appears to be coming true. What has life come to? With the opportunity to finally get over cricket, should I be relieved? Is this a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to hang up the whites for good at 22 years of age? Please help me out, anonymous. P.S. Should I tell the club coronavirus coordinator, the CCC, that all social distancing measures are a waste of time because I've been sleeping with his daughter for the past 4 months?
Christ.
So that's up in Scotland. So they're doing it tough up there.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the message. And yeah, like these are the constant existential issues that we have when playing cricket. I can only imagine what it would be like playing village cricket in Scotland and then on top of that having to deal with like socially distant regulations that mean your cricket looks even more yuck than it already would. I was a little bit thrown by the fact that he's mentioned getting changed in front of juniors again and then fresh-faced 15-year-olds a few times. I just thought that was just mentioned maybe one or too many times and then there was a sexual allusion at the end. So maybe just steer clear of cricket. Maybe that's harsh from me. That's just where my mind went with it. But
that's the kind of people you meet at cricket clubs.
Yeah. Yeah, steer clear, I'd say. If it's starting to come into your head that you need to get out of there, then yeah. Yeah.
Then maybe do.
Yeah.
So the IPL has a start and finish date, Pez. It's going to be in the UAE. It's September 19 to November
10.
Mm-hmm. The IPL is an interesting one that we've spoken about because it's just not really in Australia's radar. And now it's in the – well, it might be now because it's sort of coming into the Australian season. I think the English – England will still be playing in September, I think, because it's a later start this year in the UK. So what impact is this going to – well, I mean, the IPL is on because they've postponed the World Cup. So the basis of the IPL – no, we'll play the IPL now. That's where the money is.
Don't know. I mean, UAE, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, Sharjah. I mean, are you going to tune in? You know, it literally isn't the worst time for Australians. I know the English guys get around it because the times are a lot better.
Times are better, yeah.
And they generally appreciate cricket outside their own sphere more than Australians.
What's that like?
Yeah, exactly. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, I've just got here as a note, just Dada stuff, really. I mean, they found a window, Dada got it in. He's done the same with the IPL for women as well.
Yeah, that's right. There was a thing going on last night as we go to air that Alisa Healy was just calling out to an Indian journalist. The Indian journalist was saying, oh, this is really good. And what the BCCI have done is they've put a women's IPL tournament exactly in the same time that the WBBL exists in Australia.
Yeah.
WBBL is probably the strongest. It is. It's the strongest female tournament. So it's the IPL. It's the men's IPL equivalent, I suppose. There's like three or four Indian players who are.
Lots of overseas.
Yeah. Three or four Indian players who are playing in the IPL already. But now it's like, the Indian wants that little.
They want that space.
So
yeah, it's just obviously like women's cricket growing in Australia, women's cricket growing generally.
Yep.
And so what you do is you take the best short form tournament, domestic tournament, and then you just overlay the Indian one on top of that just at that time.
Mm.
So whereas someone like Alisa Healy was probably planning to play in two tournaments and all the best players playing in two tournaments to grow the game so everyone could see it, actually you just have a choice of one now and some of them are already contractually obliged. I mean, this is just he's just out and out India, offering Australia. And it's just really funny because your natural reflex is like, oh, you can't do that. And then you think, oh, no, a lot of colonial types did that for a long time.
Now it's India's turn.
Like we're very affronted by Indian strategic dominance. But the reality is Australia's been owned by foreigners for about 80 years, you know, iron ore, coal, metal, et cetera. But, sure, the great age of manufacturing was in Australia, but we were ultimately owned by foreigners. But it don't come for our cricket.
Don't come for our cricket. There's something in like consumer advertising. Something about like if you walk past a vending machine, do you know that? Do you know this? Past a vending machine?
No, I'm imagining. Yeah.
Let's say the vending machine's a Coke machine. It's just one machine there. If you walk past it, they'll sell like 100 cans of Coke in a day. If there's a Pepsi machine next to the Coke machine, instead of them selling 50 each. The Pepsi machine will also sell 100 and the Coke machine will sell 100. So there's double the output. So the algorithm is in the brain that like if you walk past the vending machine, which just has the one Coke machine, the choice is, do I want Coke or not?
Yeah. Love this.
And
keep going.
If there's a Pepsi machine as well, the choice becomes, do I want Coke or Pepsi?
Yes.
And so what I'm saying is Is it Besto? It looks like he's...
Besto's thick.
he's having Coke and Pepsi.
What you're saying is you're going to be up at 3 a.m. watching women's IPL followed by WBBL.
Yeah.
Because that's your choice.
I'm saying that they're monopolising the game instead of like growing the game. Mm. But, you know, India do what they want.
Exactly. Data stuff.
Pez, before we get into we recorded the interview with both Stephen Finn and with Matthew Hayden a week or so ago, whenever that was, but they're funny.
Yeah.
I think you're going to enjoy them.
Doss surprised. I have to say.
I knew he was going to be a good bloke. Yeah. Like just real, we were talking about social distancing and he said it off air, but he was like, Stradbroke Island's my face mask.
Yeah. He did too. Yeah. With Doss, I mean, I think someone said in the comments when we put the preview up for this, like, is he going to get what's going on? And I must confess, like, that's been part of my, like, view towards Doss for a couple of years. I was like, you know, he's just from that classic era of like just that Gen X edgy Australian cricketer that's just not going to look down on any kind of like weak satire from cucks about cricket. Like we consider ourselves, especially you, as you said off air.
Did I? Yeah. I don't remember that.
And you do most shows beforehand. But it wasn't like that at all. The DOS delivered, in my view. So I'm looking forward to it. And Finn is extremely articulate, another rising star in commentary as well. Yeah. So
he was funny as well.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we get into that, I should have mentioned this last week, but we're now on YouTube and you can see literally the show right now, looking at camera right now. Pezza, you can look over there. There you go. We're on YouTube right now. And these interviews are also on YouTube. So if you want to find us there, feel free to do the liking and the subscribing, the commenting and all that sort of stuff, because we really appreciate your support and we support your support as well.
And we also, I listened to Rabbit Hole this week, which is a podcast series from New York Times that said basically the algorithm of YouTube is basically warping people's brains. They're getting the watch hours up a lot. So just get one or two of our shows in and then you might just find yourself watching YouTube all the time, consuming us, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Maybe we'll sell a few mugs and become the next PewDiePie.
I get that. That's my doppelganger, PewDiePie. Get that all the time.
Nice.
You doing anything with that?
I've never seen PewDiePie.
Should we talk? Okay, well, you can call me PewDiePie and I'll call you Pezzy next week.
Sweet.
Ah, fuck myself there. Should we talk about Wisden?
Sure. Yeah, Wisden. Okay, so two good little deals for Wisden. Now, last week you would have said, our angle on Wisden, ladies and gentlemen.
What's the angle?
The angle is that if you secretly really love cricket, and a lot of you do out there, if you want to consume a beautiful digital magazine with Wisden Cricket Monthly, you can. But today we're going even further. We're going into the highbrow stuff now. We're going into their quarterly journal called The Night Watchman. We want to offer you two good deals here for The Night Watchman. So Wisden, obviously the mecca of cricket, the Dada,
obviously,
if you will, of cricket and from old school. And you will. It's the Dada of cricket, Wisden. They offer The Night Watchman. It's a quarterly journal, each issue beautifully presented, collection of long-form writing, contributions from journos, world-renowned authors, poets, academics, musicians, ex-players, and even on occasion, a knight of the realm. There's two deals that they want to do for you here. There's one issue that they've put out. It's a club cricket special, a digital-only collection of 25 pieces from the Night Watchman reflecting on and celebrating the amateur game. Also, 50% of proceeds for this will go to Club Cricket Charity, which provides financial support to cash-strapped clubs. Okay, here's the deal for that. If you use the coupon code TGC10, you're going to get that issue for £4.50 or $8, okay? thenightwatchman.net and you use the code TGC10. Here's a second deal. Don't say we don't offer you deal or bring you values. If you want the first 5 years special edition of The Night Watchman, again, Knights of the Realm write about this. Journos, forget journos, musicians. We're talking about highbrow people. We're talking about people in the upper echelon, the upper crust.
Rod Stewart of
cricket.
Of writing.
Well, Rod Stewart may have done one or not. Do your own research on that.
He's got some stuff.
It does. But, you know, there's a lot of Ghislaine Maxwell stuff out there about the upper set of New York high society.
Yeah.
It's like that, but without the pedophilia and with...
Mm-hmm. Alleged.
Just think about that, but for cricket... The first 5 years special, a bumper collection of 28 of the very best Night Watchman pieces from the first 20 issues of The Night Watchman. Again, go to thenightwatchman.net/TGC10. So that's two separate issues. The club cricket one, you can get 10% off, or the first 5 years one, you get 10% off if you use the code TGC10. Incredible writing, highbrow shit. You know you love it. You don't admit it to anybody, but thank you.
And in relation to Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, real love is finishing each other's sentences.
Look good, play good, feel good.
I guess me just whispering in their ear saying, get rarer.
But realistically, I'm thinking from ball one, I just want to park this fucking thing into the car park.
Look good, play good, feel good.
I proudly call it the Joel Wilson Institute.
Look good, play good, feel good.
Okay, he goes, well, I can't resist some of these numbers to kick things off.
I don't think
our guest is aware that we just start with their numbers,
yeah.
But here are some numbers.
Okay.
103 tests, over 8,500 runs, 30 tons, 29 50s, average of 50.7 clean, highest ever test score in Australian history, 380, 161 ODIs, 6,000 ODI runs, average nearly 45, highest of 181 not out. 10 tons, 36 50s, 24,603 first-class runs, 79 tons. So just hated runs,
yeah.
This bloke. But it's with pleasure, and it's our privilege to introduce Matthew Lawrence Hayden onto the show, or as our wiki says, Haydos or Unit. Haydos.
Unit.
Yeah. How are you?
G'day. Unit was my Valleys days, you know. Okay. They used to call me Fridge and my brother Freezer. when he dropped out of the game, I just became the unit.
You
gotta love those early doors, don't you? I just love how we turn, you know, a situation around to find a nickname out of. Gosh, it's just so Australian, and long may it bloody well continue as well.
Of course. Well, speaking of early days, Haydos, tell us about your relationship to grade cricket. Like, did you spend much time there before going on to score all the runs that I just mentioned there?
Yeah, look, Bally's Cricket was my only club. I say that very proudly and very candidly as well, because, I mean, during the time when you've kind of got offers from everyone, I love the fact that I started and stayed with the one club, the one state, the one franchise within competitions, and you can't exactly move to be a Kiwi because that would mean death by 1,000 cuts. so the one country as well. But grade cricket was a great learning curve for me. I feel that the balance also was so good because you had guys like Brett Henschel, for example, former, you know, Queensland cricketer, Michael Eframes, who came from Victoria, you know, moved up to Queensland. And then you've got the greats, you know, guys like Kepler Wessels, AB. I mean, if you couldn't learn in that environment, you were either stupid or didn't want to. So it was just brilliant for me to just be in that environment, say nothing, sit in the corner, you know, say, yeah, I'll have a beer, I'll stay a bit longer, and just listen. And it was superb because a lot of those guys that I just mentioned, you start to move up the ranks and suddenly you've got a maroon cap on as well and you start playing at another level. But the same principles apply. So great foundation place for me at Valleys Cricket Club. It was right next to my school. I was going to Morris College as a boarder there in my final 2 years of school for the bush. Didn't want to go, fellas, by the way. Just kicking and screaming. I love the bush. I could see myself doing nothing other than sitting on a tractor, planting, harvesting, tending to, like, you know, the paddocks in whatever way, tending to a couple of sheep or cattle that we ran. But, you know, Mum really just said, Matty, this not going to be enough. You know, here the land is drying up, and sadly that also meant the same for my brother as well, and so Dad and Mum still, you know, live out the property, but I came coastal way and have never looked back. Just completely love, you know, living where we are here in the southeast corner.
Well, you obviously have to do I'd imagine a 15 to 20 year, you know, grade cricket apprenticeship before you got your shot finally playing for Queensland. But I wonder, I mean, is it true that before your first innings for Queensland, you asked someone if anyone had ever hit a 200 on debut?
Yeah, I was an arrogant prick. Just say it.
And how many did you score on debut?
Less than that, so I failed.
Yeah,
well, unfortunately.
For the listeners out there, he scored 149.
I tell you what, I did learn out of that, though. I learned that not to be an absolute pillock, because That was right, the first innings. And I it was a throwaway line around that. But I genuinely felt that I'd been waiting that long in the wings to play for Queensland, that I was so confident that I wasn't going to be happy with a half score, you know, a 30. We're so confident, and I really, I mean, I copped so much black over that comment over the years, but you know, the reality of it is I just felt like I'd paid my dues, and it wouldn't matter whether it was South Australia that I came up against to make my debut or England. I was ready. And I was ready to play really good cricket. And what I probably wasn't ready for is the level of professionalism. And I can remember in the second innings, I probably learned my greatest lesson in my debut match, because it wasn't 149, even though it did give me confidence. The lesson was that never take on board your sponsor being Big Red. It was a full-strength Powers brewery at the time, bitter that we were sponsored by. And we had a function at the one of those things, the Stafford Tavern. And I'd had way too much in celebration of my debut innings. And I came home, met my brother, who was my training partner as well, and five-year elder. And I was off my choppers midway through a game. And he said, mate, I don't have double shoulder reconstructions for you to get on the piss midway through a game. And so if you look at the, you ever do that again, basically, and I'll never, ever throw another ball for you again in anger. But if you look at the second innings, I got nothing, you know, maybe, I don't know, less than 20 anyway. And from that day, I always treated the game with the utmost respect. You know, there was never a time when I just put the foot off the throttle. If I had a competitive advantage, I'd definitely drive it in. I just thought, if you're going to get a good score, make it a dirty, big, fat one. But don't take the ground, and the game and your colleagues and your mates for granted, because, geez, it's a fine line you walk on when it comes to success and failure in any sport, let alone professional sport.
Hey, Dos, it's funny you say that, like, as you're sort of putting full throttle down on your big diesel engine on the road. Cause
big, mean Mahindra XUV 500, yep. It's thirsty as a camel, this one, 2.2 turbo diesel. Just sucks it up. Man, I never had a Bowser, seriously.
Well, no, it's amazing you say that, because when I think of you, like, I just think about, like, quintessential Australian masculinity at the turn of the century, you know, like a big, smiling Queensland man, enormous chest, you know, pipes, training singlet, benching plenty probably, loving the beach, you know, gentle off the field, playing hard on it, getting on the front dog, you know, as you everything in front of square. You know, like you once said, I'm as much of an Iron Man as I was a cricketer. Like this was the blueprint, like, for our sporting success. Now it's all sort of like F45, yoga, skin regimes, veganism. Yeah. Like, do you think there's a relationship between the softening of the Australian male and the diminishing sporting success? And do we need to go back to the Hayden style of the front dog, chest, pipes, etc., to just recapture that former glory?
You know, it's interesting. I had a really good conversation with Adam Goods in one of the episodes of this year. As a cricketer, we always looked at the AFL model as being an epitomising professionalism in sport. You know, at the time when the Lions, you know, came to the Gabba, every Thursday night, there was us training late till the evening, sometimes till about 8 o'clock, 8:30. A lot of guys were dropping and running from work. Guys like Paul Jackson, for example, who by day was a bookworm and full-time accountant, and by night used to fizz him. As Malcolm Frankie, a great cricketer in club cricket, used to turn him on ice, but not. He didn't turn him at all, Jacko. But, you know, we train, and then, you know, that was the night of the Gabba Greyhounds, and we were sponsored by Forex the majority of time that I was playing as a junior in state cricket. And the happiest days in our lives was when the Benson and Hedges ticks used to rock up with the full weight special filter boxes, who were the sponsor of us, and Forex cabinets were full of beautiful bitter. And we just used to punt on the dogs as they go around. In those days, you had to walk across the dog track to get to the Gabba. So it was like a rite of passage. But then you look over to the sort of southeast, you know, where the old cricketers club used to be, and
there was the Lions, and you'd see one player being followed around like a dog on heat with someone else that was kind of in and around the setup, high performance team, taking skin folds and making sure they were hydrated and they had all their meals set out for them. So, you know, someone like Goodsy, I think, was looking the other way going, mate, how good are these professional cricketers? Not only are they getting paid more, but they have to do stuff all as well. So the joke was on us. And the first time I saw the King, Shane Warne, you know, was a game against Victoria. First year, it had been pissing down with rain overnight. Merv had obviously made the call early doors to have a big one because it just looked like we're going to get rained out. And so that's what happened. We didn't get rained out, though. You opened the curtains in the morning and it was bright blue sunshine, as it often is up here in Queensland, the night after a massive storm. And, of course, it was green as, so Warney didn't play. He was 12th man. And we won the toss and batted stupidly on a green top, as always we used to do that. And I turned to Trevor Barsby as we were walking across the dog track, and I was walking behind him that looked not dissimilar, actually, to those slipstreams, you know, when they're trying to put a new vehicle through its paces and they blow smoke over a fan and they get the slipstream and get that beautiful photo of, yeah, you know, how aerodynamic they are.
Yeah.
Well, I'm walking behind Trevor Barsby, just, you know, nervously puffing away at his cigarette, and I'm his slipstream. And then I say to him, mate, isn't that Shane Warne? Like, he's supposed to be, like, the next big thing. And he went, yeah, that's Warney. I said, well, mate, got it right. He's big. But he was chomping away on, he had a pie and a cigarette in the same hand, and he had a Coke in the other hand, and he was just trading blows, you know, like, for him. And he was that happy because he wasn't playing because he was so hungover. But now that's what cricket was sort of like. That was the culture. You play hard,
yeah,
and you also play up. So, you know, that turned around, you know, through the sort of early 90s into the mid-90s, where it became a lot more measured and a lot more people kind of like, you know, taking pulses and looking after you. Dietitians, for example, were the first sort of professional staff member outside of physio, because you didn't tour with a doctor or anything. You just had a physio and a manager who was often a board director. And I remember the first time this food specialist came in, dietitian came in, and was giving this great lecture on, you know, a bit of this and a bit of that protein, this amount of carbohydrate. Merv says, oh, miss, I've got a question, yeah. And she says, oh, what's that, Merv? She says, pizza. I just want to know if pizza's any good. And she says, yeah. You know, if you choose the right pizza, it really depends on the topping, because you've got the carbohydrate in the base, you've got cheese, you know, which is those essential fats, and you've got the toppings. As long as you don't go too hard on it and you don't eat too much of it, you should be okay. And she said, but, you know, just tell me, like, you know, how many pizzas, you know, would you often have? And Merv, as quick as, he just says, depends how many pieces they cut it up into. You know,
what an athlete.
This is our premium fast bowler, yeah, legendary Merv Hughes, that had just done it all in the game, was right in the throes of his career. And this is the sort of, you know, expectation that your young bowlers like a Brett Lee or a Michael Kasiewicz, you know, Glenn McGrath even, you know, they were bringing up through this model. But, you know, they had to set their own tone and realise that food was fuel. And that's what I speak to Goodsy about the podcast as well.
I've got to ask you, Doss, about the 380. Have to ask about it. Zimbabwe, you know, over there at Perth. I mean, I want to know, like, some days you just have a day out, don't you? But, I mean, at what point did you think, like, I'm going big today? Like, were you on about 20, or, you know, was it in the warm-ups, or was it when you saw the lineup announced for Zimbabwe? I mean, some of these sixes you're hitting down the ground off Heath Streak. Poor old Heath Streak. I mean, just absolutely front-dogging. I mean, it's the epitome of alphadom in Australian cricket. I've never felt safer in my entire life when Matthew Hayden is front-dogging and hitting Heath Streak back down the ground for 380 test runs.
Yeah, well, it's probably fortunate I was actually even playing, because just another example of how, you know, times have changed, where now the physio and the trainers, they have full say on whether you're going to participate in the game. You know, whereas in our day, and this is the situation, we'd had 8 weeks where we'd had, you know, time off. It was a very early season game in Perth, and we got over there really early. I've been over at Stratty for a large part of that, just doing my own personal training with one of the fitness trainers at Australian Cricket, Jock Campbell. And we'd surf and run sand hills, do weights, and, you know, we were Ironmen, basically. We were so fit, but we couldn't hit a cricket ball in anger. So when we got over there, I was smashing me and cricket balls in the nets. And they're a bit of razzle-dazzle, those nets, over in Perth as well. But I did my back in and did it in properly as well, like a day before the game. And the morning of the game, I was in serious doubt, and the physio at the time, Errol Walcott, said to me, "Mate, you can't play." And I said, "I don't think so, Errol." I said, "Mate, my job is to tell you that I can play, and your job is to keep me on the park." So, and this is not, these weren't words that, you know, were unknown, meaning that his job, and he knew it, was to just keep me on the park no matter what. And so it was really by necessity that I had to bat the way that I did, because I actually couldn't move. So rather than running, I thought, well, the best route surely is aerial. And so pretty much from the get-go, staying still and hitting through the line of the ball, and that's probably what is now considered to be just a hitting technique rather than, you know, a way to play, worked.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't really remember in those 11 hours apart from when I got out, miss hitting a ball. It's just everything was just coming out of the middle. So as they say in fly fishing, you know, don't never change the fly. So it just worked, and it, I suppose, you know, that really continued to work as a hitting technique for me right through as we transitioned into one-day cricket and T20 cricket as well. Became an important weapon for me personally through those different genres of the game.
Mate, speaking of weapons, your great mate Justin Langer is famously quoted as saying recently as Australian coach, you know, everyone talks about this word sledging, but there's a difference between banter and abuse. Abuse is no good, but there's plenty of room for banter.
Banter.
So many people are keen to know more about the Australian cordon, you know, during your era. So just with that in mind, I was hoping you could give us an insight into the banter style of each. Like, I'll say a name, and maybe you could give a few words on the style of each of their banter. So if I sort of said Gilchrist, just a couple of words.
Hyena on the plains of Africa. he'd chip around the lion, you know, to get whatever he could, and then he'd back away and back down.
Oh, that's perfect.
I've got a couple more. So, Warn?
Yeah. Well, let's just say he was one of the big fish. So I would just say big fish.
Yeah,
he's a top line predator. He's a pelagic man. He's top of the food chain.
This is so vivid. Good. Like early days when you were there, AB?
I would say he's more gladiatorial. Like I'm sort of, what's the word when you're thinking about someone like, you know, the gladiator, where he's just, he was so, for such a tiny man, I mean, he was ridiculously small. He was just like a pit bull. There you go. That's probably better. He's a pit bull. Once he got you, he'd never let you go. A
couple more. Tugger?
Tugger was like a wizard's sleeve. he just sort of, he'd pull a prediction out of the hat. Like, you'd go to him in the huddle after sort of being one or two down in the final innings of a test match, and he'd say, "Boys, just make sure those beers are on ice at seat time, because we're definitely winning." And we were looking at going, "Mate, they're one or two down," and, you know, Hansie Cronje is like smashing Warnie's on 120, and you're going, "Where's he get that from?" Sure enough, the ball before tee, the wizard sleeve just opens up and out puffs the sort of other 8 wickets that you needed to get to that stage, and bingo, off you went.
Two more. Junior?
Oh, Junior was a pretty nice bloke. Like, he'd say everything that
he'd say everything that was just what everyone else was thinking.
Okay.
So if he was rubbish, he'd go, mate, yeah, it's rubbish. And you think, actually, no. And the funny thing about junior sleep is that, and the funny thing is that the person that was receiving junior's sledge, who would inevitably worship Mark Waugh, because there hasn't been a finer cricketer that's maybe graced the planet, let alone Australia, would go, oh, yeah, that's probably a fair point, Mark. Actually, I am rubbish. Yeah, you're right.
And finally, Hayden, Doss.
You know.
The Doss, I don't know. Like when I was batting, I reckon I was a lot more aggressive. Like when Shoaib Akhtar, for example, was running in, I'd think of ways to really piss the fast bowler off, which is not hard, right? The moment you start showing anywhere near your spricks as you're walking towards them, there's pretty much evidence that you're going to get a bouncer. So I just sort of play that card that, yeah. You know, someone like Akhtar, for example, I'd call him B-grade Akhtar for a start, which which used to get under his skin a bit.
I'm sure.
But I'd also like to sort of leverage as well, like play the political role. Like when we were playing in Sharjah, it was 58 degrees out in the middle. Yeah. And Akhtar, when we walked out, said, I'm going to kill you today in a whole lot more colourful language. And I said, mate, that's terrific. You know, I'm looking forward to that challenge in a lot more colourful language. I said, but here's the thing, Jumbo. I said, you got 18 balls to do it. You got 3 overs because you're going to turn into a marshmallow that's been left on the flames too long and it's going to be dripping down it. And I'm going to be the one at the other end of those 18 balls that's going to be mopping it up. So, of course.
Just two blokes having a chat.
Hey, this is a half an hour story, right? But I'm just going to get to the nutshell. So I had Venkat, you know, the Austin from Chennai at the other end. So I've now got a point of leverage. So I go, right, how can I get Shoaib looking like an absolute goose and how can I tell Venkat about this? Now, India and Pakistan, there's no loss of love there for a start. So I thought, that's my point. So as Shoaib's running into bowl and he's cursing every profanity under the sun at me, I get to his bowling mark as I'm counting down his balls from 1 to 18. So it's like, this is ball number 9, for example.
Yeah.
He gets to his delivery stride and I pull out. I count the ball. He runs at me going, what the problem is? And I said, I got a problem, Venkat. I storm up to Venkat. I said, look, mate, I give everything on the game, right? I deserve everything I get. But within the protocols and etiquette of the game, surely you can't be running in and abusing someone. And so Venkat goes, oh, yeah, you're right. And he tunes him all the way back to his bowling mark, which is a mile, like it's right back at the sight screen.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think the only way that Shoaib is going to get me out here is bold, because Venkat's definitely not going to give me LB. And it's not going to get caught beyond that, because this thing was an absolute bunsen burner. It wasn't bouncing more than a centimetre. So all I had to do was just stand the ground, and that was it. He got through his 18 overs. He collapsed, seriously collapsed at the end of it. And, of course, I take the opportunity to get my glove, which I didn't need, and just go up to Shoaib and said, you want to go off, don't you? And he says, no. I said, mate, come on. There's no heroes in Test cricket. David Boone once said that to me. It's hot, and I know you're busted. Just go off. I promise you, I won't think any worse of it. Anyway, he's called old mate on, and he's gone off, and he didn't participate in the rest of the test match. He was heat struck. So that's a sort of, mine was sort of like more of a, not so much words, but just, I don't know, I just used to love that confrontation anyway. I think all of the Australian cricket team did, frankly.
Yeah.
Just finally, mate, notice you've been getting around the digital space a lot more, you know, some Instagram Live, cooking with your girls, you know, recent rendition of True Blue, can't get enough of that. You got a podcast out now, the ABC, called Dishy, goes beyond cricket, stories that your guests associate with the food they've eaten. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
See, I'm not that bright. Cricketers aren't. It's about food, but it's talking to great Australians through the lens of food. You know, and we've had a couple of beauties. Thuria Pitt, for example, you know, I reckon is probably the toughest woman in Australia. Mm. she talks about early childhood, talks about, you know, what sustained her through a training, but also through a life. So it's really delving into it, pickpocketing, if you like, a bit like Adam Gilchrist, as I was saying, pickpocketing those great stories that come out the back of experiences that these superstars have had, you know, like a Justin Langer or a Kurt Angeli, Lane Beachley, Adam Goods, through the lens of food, through different phases of their life. Boys, it's been so much fun doing. I mean, you blokes know how much I love food.
Mm.
And how big a part it's had in my life as well, from a fuel point of view, but it's also sustained so many memories. Who doesn't, right? You know, Christmas time, what are you doing? Well, you eat. Well, what are you eating? Okay. What's your earliest memories? What's mum look like? Like JL, for example, he was telling a story about his grandma, about how the sandwich that she made him was the best in the whole world. And it was three ingredients, a truckload of butter, some pickle, and some cheese. And those words of, oh, darling, you know, you'll work it off as you run around the block, I'm sure, you know. Even though he was 3 inches tall and probably couldn't afford to put on any weight. That's what this podcast is all about. So it's just getting behind individuals that and stories as they've gone through different phases of their life, some triumphs. Like Kirk, for example, you imagine, you know, he would be an expert on souvlaki's after playing a function and not finishing up until 2 o'clock and having adrenaline. He tells a great story. I think we're in Norway where he went into this little restaurant about 4 o'clock in the morning, old style decor, claiming to have a pot that had been brewing this special soup for not 3 years, not even 3 days, 300 years. We're talking about some sort of extreme Viking mushroom trip that must have been happening, I reckon. such a great story. You know, who would have ever thought, you know, as much as we know him from MasterChef and obviously in Excess, that he's got this great repertoire of different dishes that he savours and shares with Lainey, who's an absolute legend as well. So, yeah, lots of fun, boys. It's podcast is something that, well, you guys are doing one right now. You get a real insight into, you know, people through expanded conversations as opposed to sound bites and feeling under the pressure about, you know, what you're delivering.
Yeah, nice one. I'm sure plenty of people love to listen to you more. Hey, Doss, it's called Dishy. It's on ABC. And can I just say, normally we sign off with something quite formal and just say thanks, but I actually wasn't expecting this conversation. Like, I had one view of, like, the way you might have sledged, hey, Doss, heading into this conversation, and now I just think I would love to be sledged by you at all times. I don't think we've spoken to anyone more colourful or vivid in the way they've described things before. So thanks so much for the conversation.
All from a guy called Unit.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's quite easy to bullshit, isn't it? So on that note, signing off. Thanks, boys. I look forward to you following the podcast. So, yeah.
Thanks, Hayden. Appreciate it,
thanks,
mate.
Thanks so much, mate. Dad?
Yep?
Are you proud of me?
No.
Do you like my TikToks?
No, and no one else does either.
So you're not even fun and funny?
No.
Okay, here goes. This guy's represented his country 105 times, 227 wickets combined there, 7 fifers, best of 6 for 79 at test level, 551 first-class wickets, 14 fifers, a man of great height and great wheels, and I think Sam Robson has forced him to come onto this podcast.
Perfect.
They call him the Watford Wall, according to Wikipedia. It's Stephen Finn. Stephen, welcome to The Great Cricketer.
Boys, it's a pleasure to be here. I've heard a lot about you, and it's just an honour to finally be in your presence, even though it's across the other side of the world.
Mm. Where does the Watford Wall come from? Is that true, first of all?
It is, yeah. So, I mean, it's not as entertaining as you might like to think. It's from, I played an innings against New Zealand in Dunedin a long time ago now, but it was to save a test match, and I was night watchman, and I batted pretty much the whole day for 50 runs, which was incredibly boring, but it's got me the nickname the Watford Wall. So, Fair enough. People who remember that call me that.
Oh, it's pretty good having a nickname based on something you did playing for your country. Yeah. But anyway.
Comparing yourself to Rahul Dravid. Yeah, pretty good.
I suppose first things first, I mean, we're sort of crossing like topics here, but you're probably upset at Watford's relegation as well. You're a big Watford man. We just wanted to get that off the chest early.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not quite over it yet. It's less than 24 hours. You could have left it a few days to,
pardon me.
To bring that up. But yeah, it's going to be a few dark days watching Watford against Wickham Wanderers away next year on a Wednesday night or something. Yeah, it's going to be a bit sad, but hey ho, we didn't really deserve to stay up.
Yeah. Okay. Now Sam, who was on the show earlier, alleged that you've been asked to play club cricket in Australia, but declined on the basis that you didn't want to play in 40 degrees out west and risk getting towed up by some 20-year-old no-name, which to my mind is evidence of a very sound and rational mind. Was Sam correct? And if so, is that still your view of Australian grade cricket?
Well, from all that I've heard, Australian grade cricket is tougher than Test cricket. So, I wouldn't want to subject myself to the embarrassment of coming over there and being towed down by an accountant on a Saturday whilst pretending to be an ex-international cricketer. So, yeah, I don't really want to subject myself to that. And all the stories that I've heard, it's not all that pleasant place for a pond to come and play, especially a 31-year-old.
I'd imagine you wouldn't have played that much club cricket either, Stephen, because, I mean, you debuted for Middlesex at 16. 4 years later, you had over 50 wickets in a county championship season. Two questions. Have you played any club cricket, and how easy is bowling fast when you're 6'7"?
Well, the club cricket, yeah, I wouldn't have played a club cricket game since, I think, 2007,
Well done.
Or eight.
That's amazing.
Well done.
So, yeah, it's been a while. Still have bad dreams about being slogged all over the place at that age by some middle-aged fat bloke. I think in the English leagues, but yeah, it's something that when I grew up, I was lucky enough to play above myself. In terms of like when I was 15, I was playing in my men's first team, so I have experienced it and love playing club cricket, or did love playing club cricket, but yeah, not for a while.
Yeah,
it's a long one here on the same topic, Stephen. Like in 2011, at the age of 22 years and 63 days, you're the youngest England bowler to reach 50 test wickets, breaking Botham's record along the way. There's another youngster who's hit England's shores recently with Pakistan, Azim Shah. He's a teenager who bowls wheels. Aside from the fact that every Aussie last year disputed that he was 16, regardless, he's pretty quick. Now, I was just hoping you could take us into the mind of being a young tearaway, like coming from such a great height, regularly hitting 90 miles an hour. Like, I guess what I want to know is, like, when did you first experience the bloodlust as a kid, you know, like where you knew you could scare other children by bowling fast, and how bloodthirsty did it make you?
Well, over here in England, you play junior cricket on synthetic tracks
that often have
crazy, crazy pavement concrete underneath. So, so you didn't even have to bowl that quick when you were a kid. And because I was coming from quite a height, you could get them to hit people all over the place in the ribs, arms, fingers. So, it was when I was a kid, probably playing on those synthetic wickets, that you get a taste for hitting people in the ribs and around their fingers. Yeah.
Pat Cummins told us once that, like, when he was coming through the age groups, parents of opposition sides would privately come and speak to him and ask them to bowl slower to their children. Like, did you have any stories like that coming through, like where parents were just worried about you from the opposition?
Not quite. I think a lot of people questioned whether I was of a correct age. I was a lot taller, even though I was literally like a pipe cleaner, stick thin when I was a kid. I was still a lot taller than everyone else. So I think quite a few parents would come up to my parents and say, come on, like, you're taking the piss here. The kid's 15, he's playing in an under 12 game. So that's about the only thing. But I was never as quick as Patty, unfortunately, when I was younger. So I never had the problem of bowling too quick.
So like on behalf of all those children that would have seen you. No, it is. I mean, because all people who are listening to this cast, they know what it's like to turn up to a ground and you don't worry about your own warm-ups. You look to the other side and see who looks big.
Christ,
there's the kid with a beard and he's fucking a foot taller than everybody else. Did you feel all eyes on you in warm-ups and stuff when you were warming up? Like, were you like, God, why are there 30 sets of eyes on me?
slightly, but on that topic, we played as an England under 19. I played against Pakistan under 19s. I think I'd have been 17, so I was playing 2 years above myself anyway. But there were, like, I didn't have a hair on my body anywhere, and I was playing against these guys in the Pakistan team who literally had full, like, chest rugs hanging out the top of their tops, and
glorious.
And we're all sat there thinking, Christ, this bloke's bowling 90 miles an hour with a chest rug hanging out of his top. How's this fit?
So you know what it feels like.
Yeah, you know what it feels like. Yeah, playing for under-19s. Yeah. relatively serious question. I was sort of thinking about obviously very skilled and naturally gifted bowler, but over the course of your career, you sort of had some technical issues as well. You had, obviously had like the Finn's law of like brushing the stumps with your knee, and that you went through a period where you kept falling over at the crease and you change your run up and stuff. Yeah. And I sort of remember this, you know, from an Australian perspective of like Mitchell Johnson went through a stage where he got really robotic and he was sort of almost overcoached.
Yeah.
Did you have a thing like where you had so many coaches in your ear or whatever, you just want to be let go and just fucking just go from the top of your mark and just let it go and just bowl, as opposed to being like overly, you know, produced, so to speak?
Yeah, I think that's sort of part and parcel of growing up in the public eye, in the sense that I played cricket professionally when I was quite young. So therefore, people are watching you and have an opinion on you. And sometimes you can let those things affect you, I think. So, I try to stay away from reading any of the press or what people are saying at the moment. But definitely when I was younger, I was more influenced by that sort of thing, which is quite a dangerous thing. Mm. And then you're always keen to take on the opinions of coaches and listen to what people have to say. And sometimes I probably took a bit too much of that information in, but that's my own fault for listening to people too much and not sticking to my guns. So yeah, I actually had a really good chat with Mitchell Johnson in the dressing room at the end of the 13-14 Ashes series, where he had actually absolutely ripped us a new one.
Yeah.
In that series, and bowled as fast as I've ever seen anyone bowl live. Like, I've seen some quick bowlers bowl live, but that was just frightening quick, and I was glad I didn't have to face it at all during that series. but we sat down and sort of I identified with where he'd been and where he'd got to, and it was quite inspirational. So it was nice to sit down and chat with him after that.
It's funny looking back, it's been a year since The Edge came out, a documentary. The documentary explored like the darker side, I suppose, of England's success around that era that you were very much a part of. Like, what are your memories when you think about that period of English cricket and playing for England? And like, do you think that kind of tough Andy Flower-led approach would still work among younger players today?
I would say that there's probably been a change in approach towards young players from when I was a kid. I think I remember sitting in dressing rooms when I was 15, 16 years old in the second team and being called every name under the sun, like you useless bag of sticks, like things like that, that, you know, that you probably wouldn't hear being shouted or said to a kid anymore. On a number of occasions when I was that age, I got told I was burgling a living and I was only 16. So I've been told that since as well, by the way, but that's by the by. I think that style of not that Andy was particularly in your face, but he was very disciplined in the way he did things. And I think that now kids are more encouraged to express themselves and try and work in whatever parameters they seem fit, rather than work within the particular parameters that would have been put on us then. So, there's certainly a bit of me that wishes, or not wishes, but you know, I was very fortunate to play in that team that was a great team for those years, but. Now, if I was 10 years younger and I was a bit of a tearaway, would go for runs but would take wickets, and that sort of got stifled along the way a little bit by trying to fit into this conformity of going at two and over, which didn't really suit the style that I bowled. But now that's probably a bit more acceptable. So, there's part of me that wishes I was 10 years younger, but I'm sure there's a lot of blokes out there who wish they were 10 years younger in every sense.
Well, speaking of 10 years ago, you're obviously part of the famous 2010 Ashes side that won in Australia for the first time in ages. I mean, how big was the party in Melbourne and Sydney for that matter?
Well, it was, the whole tour was a party, to be honest. That's one of the overriding memories that I have of that tour, is how much fun I had. It was my first proper England tour. I'd been called up late to a tour of Bangladesh, which you can't really call that a cricket tour, I don't think. What you know, just sitting in your hotel room for every day of the tour. But I think that when we got to Australia, it was just, we had this sense of wanting to have fun and enjoy our time over there, wanting to warm ourselves to the Australian public, because that's one of the things that is a massive challenge for you as an England team going over there. If you come over and you get pumped from the first minute that you step off the plane and you let that get on top of you, it can become quite an oppressive place to tour. I remember sitting outside restaurants in Brisbane in particular before the first test, and you know, just have blokes in hats with corks hanging off it, just calling me a fucking useless, mate. You're fucking shit. You're fucking useless.
That sounds about right.
And that was I was just going for a coffee with a couple of the boys. Yeah. And you had blokes hanging over the edge of bars calling you shit. So it was, we knew that we had to win those people over. And I think that part of that was going and getting amongst it. So, you know, going out and having a few drinks every now and again. When we landed in Perth, we had a big night. And just, that plus hard cricket, I think, is one of the things that helped us win that tour big time.
When I Googled you, Stephen, as I do for all guests, you're often mentioned in dispatches alongside guys like Tremlett and Bresnan, bowlers like, all three of you would have ordinarily enjoyed like larger international careers and longer international careers, were it not, for two worldies who've decided to play forever in Broad and Anderson. So like, you're obviously still on the scene. There's guys hovering around like Archer Works, Curran, Overton, Roland Jones. Like, what do you all need to do to get rid of these blokes?
I don't know. Anyone who's got any ideas can send me a message. But yeah, they've been unbelievable, haven't they? You just think of the longevity and the injuries that I've had over the last few years. I've had two knee surgeries. I'm actually going for a scan this afternoon on a growth that I've got in my elbow that's going on. So bowling fast or bowling seam takes its toll on you when you're playing 12 months a year, and it's finally catching up with me. So I'm just flabbergasted, really, how it's not caught up with them at some stage. But it's amazing to just, they've took, 1,100 test wickets between them, which is just ridiculous.
With the, obviously we saw the first test of the England West Indies series, they left Stuart Broad out, and they were going for, what was it, Anderson, Wood and Archer with Don Bess as well.
Yeah.
And had a bit of an eye on the Australian series in 2021 coming up. I mean, that might be a tactic. I'm sure you'd like to be part of that series as well. But I mean, is that the way that England should go to try and win in Australia? Sort of bowl more back of a length, get the ball through sort of waist to chest sort of regions, as opposed to a little bit fuller? Blasting Australia out, basically.
Well, I think you have to have an element of that in your attack. I don't think you can go with solely that. I think one of the things that we spoke about when we won in 2010-11 was actually that you don't have to bowl as short as you think in Australia because of the bounce. So we wanted to attack the top of the stumps in that series, and we did that very well. I think the temptation is to get caught up with bowling too short in Australia, and naturally the guys down there, you guys, even in grade cricket, I'm sure, are good cutters and pullers of the ball. So punish anything that's I can imagine.
Yeah. Just sweat on it.
I did about short,
And I bet you'd tell me about it as well. You're fucking powder puffs, mate.
Fucking useless, yeah.
I think you have to have an element of intimidation in your attack when you go down there, and that's why Cummins, Stark, Hazelwood are so good together, because they're intimidating. But they possess different skills than that as well, which is something that the England bowlers could take heed of once they go down there, or when they go down there next year.
You obviously play with some big personalities in your time, like Matt Pryor, Kevin Peters and stuff. Also some more of the rarer units, Monty, Johnny Besto. I mean, how hard would it be to be living in the biosecurity bubble right now, just living in each other's pockets day after day, playing cricket, then going back to the room? Like, I mean, how tough would that be?
It wouldn't be easy. I think the mixture of characters that you find in a cricket team, I'm sure in a grade cricket team, you've probably got the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
The mixture of personalities, which is why cricket is so great. But we're used to spending time together on tour and being away together a lot. But I think that this would be another level on top of that. Yeah. So I think just being in that one space the whole time, there's probably been a lot of PlayStation played, I'd say.
Yeah.
Stephen Finn, thanks so much for your time. You've given us more than we asked for, which is normally what happens by force. And yeah, absolutely no way I'd be sitting on the back foot if you were bowling there. I've never played a bull shot in my life.
Are you front dog?
Yeah, nothing. No, nah. Just sitting there.
No, that's brave. Fair enough.
Thanks very much, mate.
No worries, boys. Pleasure.
New Jarden, 6 for 9. Cock him out. That's Ben Stokes' old club, isn't it? Cock him out, cricket club. New Jarden, 6 for 9. 6 for 9. 6 for 9. And cock him out. New Jarden.
Nice, Gary!
As a sincere one from me to start, I think, in relation to Budgie. And I've called you by your correct nickname this time. Although Pezzy did seem to take off. A lot of comments. A lot of DMs.
I think if you're able to emasculate somebody, then you go for it. You know, if you get a laugh out of it and you emasculate somebody, I mean, we live in a zero-sum game world. It's all about hierarchy.
I wasn't trying to. Like, even better. I could have called you Daddy Kisser, like that guy from Masthead yesterday last week.
Ankles.
Decaf. Yeah. There's some other good ones.
He drinks decaf coffee. That's beta.
I was going to say, though, we should be earnest in that Budgie Smuggler, it's a very uncertain time, and Budgie Smuggler has been extremely kind to us for a number of years now. Yeah. I think about over a year now. Mm-hmm. And they've been massive supporters of ours, and if it wasn't for them, then, you know, we'd be underground or something like that.
Well, also, great supporters that have, you know, allowed us to stave off many gambling companies saying, hey, you talk to people we want to talk to. We're plenty of you guys around.
Yeah.
And that's Budgie. Budgie helps with that.
I was also thinking, because they supported us on the UK tour last year, which actually started a year ago today as we recorded that. Yeah.
Wow.
So it seems like a lot's happened in the year.
Mm.
Anyway, it's a thing that happened, and that was all thanks to Budgie.
Yeah, and Budgie is still kicking on.
Yeah.
I mean, we're obviously recording right now in a state that is literally in a state of disaster, officially, legally speaking. Police have powers.
It's a disaster.
It's a disaster state. And Budgie, again, are coming to the fore. They are creating masks.
That's what I was trying to say. They're nice people.
Yeah, nice people. They create a mask. You can design your own mask, all sorts of things. You can put on whatever you want. I mean, I was talking about Rabbit Hole earlier. Mm-hmm. You know, if you are a QAnon believer, just chuck a Q on there as well. Okay, sure. you help with misinformation.
Yep.
Or am I part of the global cabal now? Mm. Just trying to get you off. Pardon? PewDiePie.
what?
Just trying to give ideas for things you can put on a mask.
What about the
Curtis
idea
Camper,
that, you know, when you go to school and you're like especially now when you go to school, it's a bit like Pez, I think. Enough's enough, mate. No, like, you know, when you're at school and you're just like, well, none of this is relevant. And you're just thinking about like I don't need to learn about like sciences or physics or, you know, when
I remember those thoughts,
But then you're also just like, 5G gives me cancer.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe there's a bit of a balance there to strike. So maybe some 5G stuff on your budgies, on your mask.
Yeah.
Just question mark.
Well, you subscribe to that. That's your, we were talking about that off air as well.
What's your favorite conspiracy theory?
Look, it's pretty cliche, but I got into JFK stuff for a while.
Damn it. We got the same thing. Yeah. That's the one that I know most about, I reckon. And obviously I know fuck all, but like it's an interesting one.
Back and to the left.
Exactly. Magic bullet theory.
Is that from the book depository? Wouldn't have thought so.
Don't think so.
Just one guy.
Doesn't make any
just
sense.
One dude.
Yeah, hell of a shot.
Hell of a shot.
I call him the shot.
And then he was dead pretty soon after. Jack Ruby, bang.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, oh, you're gone. I can't say anything about it now. Yeah. But no, Epstein's probably the newest one. To be honest, the Epstein stuff.
Yeah. Is that even a conspiracy? I guess it is. Yeah, I guess it is.
He's dead too.
You go against the official story, don't you?
Yeah.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. He died, he killed himself. Oh, did he? Okay.
As I said last week, Ghislaine Maxwell, trials not till next year. So there's plenty of time if you're going to get those in your budgies. Plenty of time.
BudgieSmugglerUK.com.
Hashtag RTDCPez. As I said before, you can find us on the YouTube machine, and basically we're across every single social media now, except for TikTok, because we're not owned by the Chinese just yet. Although if a Chinese, you know, backed company or, you know, a government funded organization want to get in contact with us,
please,
happy to, you know, sell some data. That's data, not Sourav Ganguly. Don't want to sell anything related to data.
Although there's probably a good crossover there, but anyway.
Something for Telstra to look into.
Mm.
as they're giving people cancer with 5G.
Yep.
Tom Redman writes in, Pezzy, says, "Dear TJC, I'm writing to inform you of the serious detriment you have done to my mental health, demeanour around my friends and general outlook on life. For a long time, I've been a listener to the highly successful UK-based cricket podcast, Tailenders. I'm sure you're familiar, but to those who are not, it is a positive, uplifting show starring England legend James Anderson, which deals with getting new people into cricket and celebrating its wonders across all levels. I used to love this podcast and even went back after many years and had a bit of a net with my friends recently. I sent down some very ordinary dobblers and even considered joining a team. That is until I came across your podcast, which reconnected me with the harrowing demons which tore me away from the game in the first place. Your bitterness, cutting Aussie cynicism, all that focus on being good or fucking off has honestly destroyed the child within me, and I'll never pick up a cricket ball ever again. Not only that, I can't even listen to Tailenders anymore. I see that podcast now has the most cringy, pathetically cheesy thing I've ever heard. I never want to hear it or any other non-skilled English cricket fan ever again. I shouted nice Gary at a guy who fell off his bike on the other side of the road the other day. I hate myself.
Yeah.
Hope you're happy, Tom. P.S. Pezzy said a few weeks ago in relation to the Triple C that each prior act relates to and informs the following act. So does that mean that the kind of century you score influences the nature of the chop? If Dom Sidley burgled one the other night after his 100, would the sex be an agonising, ugly grind with no runs on the offside equating to a lack of foreplay? While Steve Smith would be lying in bed next to a woman saying, I didn't mean to do all that weird stuff, it just kind of happens. Does anyone actually believe that? Anyway, just a thought.
Just a thought. Well, thanks for the message, Tom Redmond. Well, look, first things first, podcast beefs, not really our go. Let's beef. Let's have it right. Tailenders, have you listened to it before, he goes?
No, I've seen a live show or something on YouTube maybe.
Yeah.
I know about it. I don't think I've listened to it.
Highly successful podcast, yeah, done by the BBC. And yeah, also, let's just make a few comparisons here. Tailenders, hosted by Greg James, BBC, has...
What do you say?
Yeah, well, exactly. What I'm saying is that he's got about 3 million followers and he's a very successful presenter.
Yeah. Finish your point.
Felix White is involved. He's a guitarist in indie UK indie group, the Maccabees. Yeah. Considered one of their songs to be played at, like, my wedding, over CD, obviously.
Okay.
I got married that long ago. And James Anderson is part of it. He's taken the most wickets of any seamer ever in Test cricket.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no real comparison with a show with, you know, Pezzy and Thick Boy Higos. You know?
Thick Boy.
Yeah, it's positive and uplifting. If you like it, great, go for it. And I'm sorry for whatever we've done to you to make you cynical and hate yourself. But yeah, no dirt on Tailenders here, I have to say. Sorry.
Well, I had a different answer.
Yeah, go for it.
Fuck those blokes. No.
Yeah.
The answer that I had for this question from Tom was that it relates to identity, in that, like, in England, the place of cricket, we've spoken about this off air, I think, maybe on air as well, the place of cricket is a little bit less sure than it is in Australia. And so, for instance, like, you can sledge cricket in Australia because, like, it's the national game. It's the only sport in the summer. It only really competes with, I guess, the A-League and then the American sports and the Premier League, I guess.
Is it kind of like your brother or your sister? Like, I can absolutely give it to you because deep down we're connected by blood and
that's
I
right.
love you.
That's right.
You know what I mean? There's no doubting our relationship
that's
here.
That's right.
So cricket's a bit more precarious.
That's right.
Like a friend that you want to hold
so
on
I
to.
Think, like, the reason that Australia have pursued cricket so strongly is because, like, secretly we're actually really angry at, like, being sent here from England. And so we're like, so cricket's your game, England? Okay, we're going to be the fucking best at it. And this is now our thing. Like, the same way, like, the West Indies in the 80s.
It's like getting back at someone for a bad breakup.
Exactly.
I'm going to get hot like Gwyneth Paltrow and Sliding Doors and show you. It's just been 120 years of, like, just trying to alpha someone who broke up with us.
Yeah. And then the same thing with, like, the 80s West Indies team. You know the whole, like, that Fire in Babylon documentary?
Yeah.
And then Tony Gregg was like, we're going to make them grovel. Yeah. There was, like, some slavery stuff and, like, the white and black thing going on there. Yeah. And they're like, we're going to fuck you. So it's like identity stuff. Yeah. I'm not sure what's going on with India. They might have the same thing going on. I'm not really sure what their relationship
is. Most likely.
Yeah, most likely. But I'm saying it's identity. And so, like, whilst we can give you some real stuff that's going on here. It's probably a more secure place. Because like England are always trying to lift up the game. It's yes. got to be like given to more people, like the World Cup, the Ashes. That was going to be that big year.
It's a great answer.
Got to get the final on TV and stuff like that. But we all know that it's fucked.
And but also we know, and this is like fourth wall stuff, like England cricket lovers are generally better at just superficially at surface level enjoying the game. They just know how to enjoy the game. I mean, look, we were talking about club cricket before. Guys will turn up in full whites. We'll get videos from people where it's literally pissing down with rain, sweeping rain. Four guys will be huddled in full whites in a car during tea, but they've still got quartered sandwiches, retaining the dignity of afternoon tea, the quaintness of afternoon tea.
Right.
So congratulations to, you know, tail enders have like these massive live shows where like they play music and Felix is on the guitar and they're like really uplifting like polyphonic spree experiences.
Yeah.
You know, ours is like telling the audience to fuck off for a shit ass TGC question. You know, there's yin and yang. There's a place for both.
Yep.
It's not one or the other.
Yeah. Who's to say which one's better? But ours are certainly more successful.
It's, I don't know if that's true.
I think we're running out of time here, mate. This show's gone on.
Ah, shit.
Let's just do one more.
Okay, one more. All right, one from Fergus. Hey, boys, to say the last 12 months has been shit would be an understatement. Around this time last year, I was in contract negotiations with my then work. All things were going swimmingly until my boss started avoiding me. I, however, was extensively familiar with this play, whereby avoiding the first grade captain on a Thursday night had become a bi-weekly ritual and knew this was bad news. Alas, I lost my job. Stuff 'em, I thought. I don't want to work there anyway. This is going to be great for me. I'm finally free from this hellhole. So after a period of not having to... of enjoying not having to go to work and having lunch beers on a Tuesday, the job search began. Come January, and I'd picked up a far better job and was pretty happy with how things were progressing in my new role. Clear skies ahead, I thought to myself. However, it was around this time I started to notice things on the home front were going about as well as a Shane Watson DRS referral. Not to worry, I thought, a small blip on the radar. I had been with my partner for 6 years and assumed we would just get through the issues. Then coronavirus and the ensuing lockdown hit Australia, and for the second time in a matter of months, I found myself unemployed again. This was obviously not good news for my relationship either, and after a couple of months of my days consisting of going from the couch to the fridge, things had gone from bad to worse, and my long-term girlfriend and I decided enough was enough and cut our ties. Oh well, I thought, bad things come in threes. That's it for me. Back on the horse and back on track. Then I received a call. Coronavirus had claimed the life of a close relative. Shattered by the news, I was devastated by the realization that I could not attend the funeral as the relative resided overseas. A Zoom call would have to suffice for the goodbyes. Unfortunately for me, having no job, no income, and no partner to shoulder the load was not going to get the mortgage paid. So at the age of 40-odd, brackets 31, I found myself having... fucking hell, it's always that... I found myself having to move back in with my parents. Fumbling through a few things in the back shed, I came across my old cricket gear. The ensuing shadow batting in the backyard would have rivaled Marnus's hallway antics. Form is temporary, class is permanent, I thought to myself.
Fuck me.
It's like six lines on from his friend dying from coronavirus, and he's saying form is temporary, class is permanent. Oh, God. Fuck. I thought to myself, letting my imagination run wild, I was recalling the halcyon days of my grade cricketing career. Conveniently disregarding the fact I was dropped for 6 first grade grand finals, I found myself considering a comeback. So, boys, my question to you is, will a grade cricket comeback get my life back on track after being alphaed by the universe for the last 12 months? Or will my inability to make runs only serve to disappoint my father as much as the dinner I cooked him tonight did? Thanks in advance. You do it. You got anything,
Fergus?
Oh, it's just a wild ride, you know. Like you feel sorry. Like you've got a close friend that's passed away, and condolences, obviously, and of course. But the honesty of like, and the next scene of this story, I'm in the hallway saying form is temporary, class is permanent. Maybe I'll play grade cricket again. It's just a bit going on.
Yeah, there was a bit going on there. That's one for the Clarkson there. You're right, Pezza. Fergus, thank you very much
for the question.
Very earnest emails. I'm looking
Get on YouTube.
Fergus seems like a YouTube guy. Yeah. Okay. No. Very honest email. And 2020 shit for heaps of reasons. But yeah, that's a horrible list of things to have occurred in, like, in sequence there. And so very sorry about your job, losing your friend.
Yes.
Relationship.
Is grade cricket the answer?
Well, that's what I was thinking, like, you know, like 2020 sucks for everyone. And I was thinking the other day, you know, here in Melbourne, stage four, it's like, what does this mean for me?
Yeah, of course.
And, you know, like, I don't know what the answer is. Like, I suppose, well, in a relationship sense, right, so Fergus has just gone through a breakup. You know what, like, if it's, you know, if it's meant to be, someone will always fight for that relationship, right, Pez? So, like, you know, if it's meant to be, someone will figure it out, right? But if not, great time to work on yourself and reconnect with your friends. Reconnect with your friends. That's a really good one. I'm not sure the cricket club is the right place to find those friends necessarily, so that wouldn't be the thing that I'd be doing, but, like...
Not grade cricket. No one's your friend in grade cricket. Everyone's just trying to push you down.
Yeah, exactly. Even the ones who seem like your friends, they're like, well, absolutely. I hope I score more runs than you. I hope you fail.
When you get out, they are punching the air with joy, I promise you.
Mm.
But 2020 is so inverted, maybe grade cricket is the answer. I don't know, man. I've just never played at a grade cricket club and heard somebody say, you know what, my life was off track. A lot of things were going wrong for me. I lost my job. I lost my relationship. I lost close friends. Mm. This club saved me. It is literally the reverse. It's like somebody's like, I lost my job, I lost my relationship, I lost my friends because of this.
The thing is, like, you feel like that, like, you should be able to say this club did save me, but no one's ever said it.
No one's ever said it.
But then,
can you imagine that? Like at can you imagine that at a great cricket club? Like, oh, you're going back to the club, boys? Yeah, we're going back to the club. Everyone's having beers, saying what they got, and all that sort of stuff. And someone just fucking clinks the beer glass, the beer bottle, and says, "I just want to say something, boys." People just be like, "Fuck this bloke," side mouth.
The only thing someone will be saying is like, "Just want to say something, boys." Pay your subs this year.
Exactly. Yeah.
Club in trouble.
Yeah. There's like three or four things you're allowed to say after the match, like at back at the club.
Yeah.
And one of them is not, this club saved my life.
Just want to say something, boys. They were the shittest blokes in the comp.
Yeah, exactly. That's another one, yeah.
See you next week.